Welcome to the Minute 8 Gang Podcast, episode 364. I am Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
I love starting the day with a little yakety sax.
Yeah, well, I wish I could play it, but copyright. Of course, we could probably do some fair use by editorializing over yakety sax and how Benny Hill used it. And
yeah, and I think you could use 30 seconds of it without
that'd be fair use. Yeah.
You know, there you go. Well, See, now you're committed to playing that.
Yeah, I know. Jeez. All right. Well,
yeah, thanks. Anyway. Now I'm going to hear that song in my head all weekend.
Yeah, I know.
No. Please.
Yeah. All right. I will use it. Okay. Let's dive into some Minnesota stories because we have a very interesting guest today.
I think so. And Chuck will be joining us. But Stratasys. The company that just won't go away.
My wife is desperate because she bought too many shares and it tanked. They tapped an IBM vet to be chief marketing officer. And then this morning, just totally out of the blue, I get this SeekingAlpha.com. I subscribe to three different categories. And one of the categories is technology. They said that there's one big problem out of the way, and basically it's Hewlett-Packard, who has essentially just not fulfilled their commitments on terms of what they're going to do in 3D printing.
Moved at a snail's pace, is that what you're saying?
Yes, absolutely. So they still haven't entered the market with their Fusion 3D 4200 printer. I don't know anything about these things, but it starts at $130,000, so I haven't bought one for home yet. Figured I'd get a couple of Teslas first.
Sure, why not? Yeah. go buy a six pack of Priuses.
Yeah, no kidding. But I'm really hoping that they start to knock it out of the park again. That would be a good thing.
Well, do you think that with HP entering the market that might be an exit for Stratasys at some point?
Gosh, well could be. You know, at one point, or maybe they still are, they were OEMing their 3D printers to HP. So we'll see what happens. The CEO's leaving. CEO's leaving June 30th, so they have a new CEO and who's probably already moving forward on stuff. But at any rate, I don't know how many people who are listening know this, but U.S. Internet, the company that I think they're in Minnetonka, the wireless, they got the wireless contract for the city of Minneapolis, and now they're moving into high-speed fiber, so they're starting to drop high-speed fiber around in the Twin Cities, but apparently they ran into a little snag with the Minneapolis Park Board. What's that all about?
Well, they won't let them dig unless they pay them exorbitant amounts of money to connect houses.
Really?
Yeah. So they won't let them dig in certain places under parkland near Minnehaha Lake and Falls, and or maybe it's Nokomis and Minnehaha, whatever. Yeah. But it's in that area, general area. They won't let them dig, and in some places near there, they're charging $27,000 for a permit to dig to connect one house, which is even though those houses are pretty spendy up there, that's a little high for
that. That's a little high. Yeah, but, you know, the promise of fiber, of course, is great. I'd love to get it. But 100 megabits per second for $40 a month is what.
Yeah, it sounds good. Oh. So if that were available here, I would strongly consider it.
Yeah, no kidding. Especially if it's symmetrical.
I'd strongly consider it. Yeah. I would strongly consider it because it's like half of what I'm paying now and twice, and, you know, many times faster.
Yes. Right.
So it would be like a no-brainer.
But, a no-brainer, as it were.
Well, this brings up interesting points, though, as fiber goes, you know, and, you know, across the country. There are places, you know, that are protected that you can't bury cable.
Right.
Put it on the pole, I say.
Yeah, put it on the pole, and it goes out in storms, you know. Great.
But, you know, that's one of the things that we talked about with respect to cable companies and how, you know, they got all these rights of way so that they could string cable along power lines.
I would assume that all of the conduit that is down for cable is also available for for other people to put their wires.
I would sure hope so.
Hope so.
Because it's, isn't it a public, it's a public access kind of deal, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure. I'm not sure what the
cable. Well, no, it is. It is. Yeah. Especially on telephone poles and power poles, you know, all the ground, there's a swath that is public land. So
underneath it?
Well, no, I mean, so for example, in the back of my dad's house, a lot of Bloomington's this way and a lot of Richfield and Edina. There's a, I think the easement is, 6 feet. Wide that essentially the city,
From the curb.
Well, it's from the curb, but also in the back of the house where the utility poles run.
Gotcha.
They run in between, you know, but behind each house, along a swath, and the poles are up and so on. Now, granted, in all the new developments are burying stuff, but, so this will be interesting to see how Comcast reacts. In fact, they invited me and I couldn't go, but, they had a big, to do. Did you go, Tim?
I did not.
So there,
but I was plugged into it. And that was a great segue, Steve.
Thank you.
What?
Well, there's there's an article here about,
Julio's article.
He went. Yeah.
Just stop a second. We have to stop and revel in that segue.
That was good. It was subtle.
It was subtle. It was well placed.
It was.
It flowed.
You know what? People don't want to know how the sausage is made, Phil.
That's true.
And if the schmuck on Minivata hadn't stopped to point it out, nobody would have noticed.
I know. I'm sorry. That's right. I'm sorry. But anyway, they announced a bunch of new stuff. including the cloud DVR, which sounds good. Now, you don't have X1, do you, Steve?
No, I do not.
Well, if you did, you'd need a box, but now coming later in the year, you won't to get their DVR service.
Yeah, everybody's been pitching me. The Comcast people have been saying you really need to take a serious look at X1. And, you know, I've been kind of toying with the idea. But we just don't
watch. Julio likes it.
Yeah, but we just don't watch enough broadcast television. Pretty much on Hulu or HBO or the PBS app or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and a big streaming guy.
A big streaming. Yeah. But they're really moving forward on that cloud DVR and video streaming. I really think that we're going to see a lot of moves by the cable company, specifically Comcast, in terms of competing with the new rollout of potential set-top boxes that have been the FCC has allowed, and now they have these public hotspots because of all the wireless modems they're putting in, which, by the way, I found out, I was always troubled by the fact that, you know, if there was somebody slamming your public Wi-Fi, that it would throttle your bandwidth, and apparently that is not the case, that it is, in fact, separate, so.
I believe it's separated, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I mean physically separated with by frequency. So it's potentially doesn't even impact you whatsoever. So
I think the important thing is about this announcement from Comcast is the cable guy credit. If the guy misses his wait window, you get a $20 credit.
And you can watch where he's going too.
Yeah.
So, you know, so you can see how far away.
To add to your frustration.
That's right. Jeez. What's he doing over there?
What's he doing? Why can't he come here? What's he doing at McDonald's?
Yeah.
It might be too much information, huh?
Well, I have, in fact, stopped before and talked to guys in trucks if I needed something. And they're pretty great, you know.
What do you say? Hey, buddy.
Hey, cable dude.
Yeah.
Hey, I could use a new splitter. Come on.
Yeah.
I can use a new splitter.
But then he follows me around and comes in and starts hustling my wife. And isn't that what Jim Carrey did in The Cable Guy?
The movie? I never saw that movie. I heard it was too dark.
I didn't watch it either.
So I got a quick quiz for you guys.
What?
Yes, sir.
Which local baseball team is leading their division right now?
Twins.
Is it the Lakeville Bombers?
No.
Who?
It's the St. Paul Saints.
The St. Paul Saints.
Oh, of course.
See, I was trying to segue into that next story.
That was good. That was good.
A little quiz to get over there.
Well, this is
four, and they won last night.
This is another good article by our buddy Julio Ojeda Zapata at the Pioneer Press. But this is about an app.
Yep.
It's called Bleacher. It's developed by Bleacher.
Right. It's the St. Paul Saints app. And yeah. I downloaded the Android version. It works well. Gives you lots of information.
Cool.
Allows you to buy tickets, you know. I think in the stadium, you can do food and drink ordering just like you can with the MLB app if you're at Target Field.
Right, how do they geolocate you? Do you just tell them what seat you're in?
Yeah, but it does use your phone's GPS to locate.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah, but you actually, you know, tell them which seat and they bring your stuff.
Right.
I don't know. I think that sounds a little, you know, like you self-important. Like you think, well, I can't get up in the inning and go out there and wait in line and with the unwashed mask.
But Tim, you know, Tim, wait a minute. I know. Just you know, because
of my martini, Jeeves.
Because obesity levels are off the charts globally. Imagine how many people have chafed thighs, and how this would really save a lot of chafing. Well,
you know, those people could use either talcum powder or they can use the exercise or both.
This could actually cut down on, you know, spontaneous fires caused by chafing.
That's right. That's right. Well, you don't know how people just spontaneously combust. Come on.
Right.
I bet you're the guy that's in there when given a choice at the Dyson hand dryer because of chafing, right?
No, actually, I try not to use them because they blow germs all over the place.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big deal.
They're cool, actually.
They've produced studies on that those are actually worse than just grabbing the handle on the door on the way out.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, great.
Suck up all the air that's filled with all, you know, we have one in our office building that is like, it's right next to the urinal, and I'm thinking, wonderful.
Funny.
So anyway, we digress. Just for Steve's excitement level, the Target has an in-store space for the smart home. They've moved it from the test phase. They're moving it into an actual Minneapolis area stores.
I love this. Wow. I love this. But again, we'll come back to the fact that the primary reason that I bought and then you bought, Phil, the Smart Things Hub is that, you know, the promise, and it's been pretty much fulfilled, mm-hmm. is the fact that it doesn't really matter what device you buy. It's going to work with smart things as long as it's on the list of compatible products.
Right.
Or unless you're a super geek.
So what you're saying is this connected rubber duck that's in this picture on the story, that will work with smart things?
No, it will not. See, that's the kicker. I mean, if you look at Nest works and some of the Belkin products work and Philips Hue and all of that. But like the Ring doorbell that I bought and that you bought, Phil, mm-hmm. That doesn't work with smart things.
What?
So that's a separate app. Not that you need
that.
What
kind of crazy crap is that?
Oh, I know.
Yeah, it's not that you need it though.
But that was the same thing. We went to the Verizon open house when they had that big rollout at the Mall of America, is they had this whole connected home area and that's all great, except I don't want 25 apps.
Right,
you know, to run the stuff because it's just that's a crazy maker.
Well, but will the connected basketball work with your SmartThings hub?
Don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh,
I don't think you need a connected basketball.
Well, if you're training it, it's good. It gives you all sorts of telemetry data and stuff. Uh-huh. You can really help with your jump shot.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. That sounds good.
All right.
There's a guy. There's a guy that we're going to have on the cast. And I've known Chuck Olson for a long time.
Yes.
He's a fixture.
He is a fixture.
He's a fixture in the art world and here in Minneapolis, also the news business and technology. He's really kind of done a little of everything. And, you know, he's done some very exciting things in combining the different elements of his interests together. And he's a 20-year veteran of media. He did websites for Twin Cities PBS and Radio K.
Well, he was one of the first video bloggers.
He was one of the first video bloggers.
And he's on, so he's really listening to us praise him.
Well, he's an amazing guy.
We're actually just going to, you know, list all of his accolades because he's, you know, I grabbed his LinkedIn bio and it's like, dude, what is it you don't do, Chuck?
I don't do Windows.
Okay, good.
Thank you. Good night, everybody. Try the
early for me to be clever.
No, stop.
Oh, come on. Hey, by the way, was that your cat in the background, or were you stepping on it?
My cat is being demanding.
They're like that sometimes.
Oh, yeah. They don't. They're against podcasts, I think.
So, ladies and gentlemen, Chuck Olson joins us to talk about his latest venture, virtual.
No. Oh, I'll listen to you.
Conceptually, it's virtual.
Conceptually, it's virtual.
His company is visual, but conceptually, it's virtual. So,
and I'm Chuck so right now is virtual for us. So,
it's the space between the phone lines. That's the original definition of virtual reality.
Yes, and we're visualizing Chuck right now. So.
So, Chuck, this is a very complex, cumbersome way of getting into introducing you and some of the great stuff you're doing and your new company, Visual, and basically to talk a little bit about how things are popping along for you in that space. Yeah. First, tell us what Visual is, and then tell us a little bit about this deal that's landed you on Billboard.
Yeah, no kidding.
I never thought that would happen.
No, that's a lot of – that's very cool.
Yeah, no, I wasn't expecting it at all. It's like, oh my gosh, this is getting some press. And somehow I wasn't even like, when you're so heads down, it's hard to think about like, oh, people might actually be talking about this.
Yeah.
So Visual is a virtual reality media and technology company. We primarily do two things. One is we create 360 video and virtual reality content. And then we also, have created a 360 video platform that includes branded 360 video apps and a dashboard for managing content.
Very nice.
Yeah, and that's what Rhapsody VR is part of. They're basically our first customer to go public that are on that platform. So it's a mobile app you can download for iOS and Android, and it has a bunch of cool live 360 concert experiences that we filmed at South by Southwest, as well as a video from outside First Avenue the night Prince died, which was an NPR event. And folks can watch it either just on your phone, or you can pop it into a cardboard and watch it in VR.
That's great. That's great. So, Chuck, how did you get to this point? I mean, you've done some really great things in the past. You know, we've talked about some of the work you've done with Uptake, you know, Chuckumentary, VidTiger. Is VidTiger still around as well?
I like to say that VidTiger is sleeping.
Okay.
VidTiger is asleep. Yep. I got here through a series of missteps, Phil. and by being unemployable. No. VidTiger led directly into Visual. VidTiger was basically a video production firm, and we did a lot of great stuff with a lot of great clients like the U of M and Bush Foundation and some Fortune 500 companies. But we started getting a little bit bored with video. We've been doing it for a while, and we just started looking for new ways to engage people. And VidTiger was a similar arts building in Northeast Minneapolis and kind of the heart of art world and the art scene. So we wanted to do something really cool to engage people for Art of World in a really immersive way. So this is kind of like pre-VR. We were interested in immersing people through really large rear projection screens that were interactive. And we created this project called Future Cave that used a Kinect depth camera and video game software to have this sort of interesting experience that you could sculpt a planet with your body. And it was very kind of physical and digital at the same time. The U of M has a VR design lab, and the guys down there were fans of Future Cave, and they said, hey, you should make a VR client for Future Cave. How would you like to borrow our Oculus Rift prototypes? And I was like,
nice.
Give me those. And of course, they'd created their something better themselves using iPad minis and 3D printed headsets. So they didn't need these first generation Oculus Rift prototypes anymore. So our guy, Max Hoagland, who created Future Cave, made a VR client for it. And so when I first put on that headset in Future Cave, my mind was just totally blown. Because rather than... what tends to happen with VR is, you know, we're used to consuming media through a rectangle or a screen. And in VR, like, there is no screen or rectangle. there is no spoon. So you you become totally immersed in it. So and that was just an amazing experience with Future Cave. And basically that was the moment we said, okay, this is the future. Like, this is incredible. We formed a new company. Eventually it was called Visual. And yeah, that was actually, we started that in late 2014, which was, people had no idea you're forming a what kind of company now. You know, it was kind of before the current craze. But now we're in a good position because we've been, producing 360 video for over a year now, and we've kind of been in the space longer than most folks in this area. So that's starting to be, starting to actually get us clients and things.
Yeah, I think it's exciting.
Well, one of the things that I've been curious about, and somebody that's so immersed in the space as you are, no pun intended, there's all of this discussion. So my son and I went down to GlitchCon down at the Alumni Center at the U of M. And he's just a huge gamer. I mean, that's all he wants to do. And he's at the U and he's going to get into video game design and production. But, the point is cool. That, we sat through this whole VR session and had a lot of discussions, and they had some demos and stuff that we could use where we didn't. And there's kind of this thought process on which path do we walk down? Do we walk down the Google Cardboard type path, which is the low end and it's more reachable for everyone and all of that? Or do we walk down the Oculus Rift type path where you're going to need, the best possible, PC platform and $1,500 goggles to move? And sort of when you sit back and you visualize where this is going to be, say in 2 years, do you think that the technology from a player or a user standpoint is going to be something that's going to be affordable and is going to be accessible really to a mass market?
It is. It's kind of there's a wide range of experiences possible right now. We kind of, our company started out focusing on the Samsung Gear VR, which is kind of right in the middle.
Right.
It's like, it's a lot better than a Google Cardboard, and it's not nearly as nice as the Oculus Rift or something like that. But what's, I think, going to happen is that a lot of the high-end experiences that you get with desktop VR, which by the way is like absolutely incredible and magical, and it gives you an idea of like what true VR really is and could be, like that compared to a cardboard is really quite a gap of experience.
Well, Volkswagen Beetle versus a Ferrari, happened, right?
There you go. Yeah. Well, when I show people different headsets, the cardboard, I'm like, this is kind of the Ford Fiesta of mobile VR, and the Cadillac of mobile VR is the Gear. And I guess the Vive would be the Ferrari or something.
Yeah.
But a lot of what you can do in those desktop headsets is going to trickle down to mobile pretty quickly. Both as like processors and display technology, just keeps getting better. With Google announcing Daydream, they, part of that announcement, which was sort of a platform for VR, includes an input device. And that's right now, that's something that you can do on desktop VR that is not so easy in mobile, which is have your hands in VR as well as your head, which really kind of completes the illusion or, immersion of having your whole body in VR. So I think that's going to happen pretty quickly. And there's also Google has Project Tango, which basically they have depth cameras, built into tablets and phones, which means if you ever see one of those crazy, Microsoft HoloLens videos where your monsters are coming out of your office wall or cubicle, and there's a Minecraft waterfall on your coffee table and that sort of mixed reality, depth cameras are what's going to make that possible. And as soon as we have a depth camera built into our phone, then our phone understands the 3D space around us, right, and can layer virtual stuff over it. So mobile is going to be very exciting for VR and AR, and I think it will be affordable within the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm gonna put a link in the show notes to Vive's site if people haven't seen some of the videos and so forth. And I know this is kind of at the high end. Obviously, we'll have links to your site and all that, and some of the news articles and so on. But the promise is really there, and it's fun to see somebody local who is really into it and is getting so much play. Did you go out to Google I/O with Rhapsody?
I didn't, no. We didn't even know they were going to do that.
Oh, that was kind of cool.
We found out the announcement's coming up, and I didn't know they were going to do it at I/O. So yeah, it was cool to just have a connection to that.
Yeah. Well, and to get all the play because of all the press that's there.
Well, I was really glad that Billboard did mention it. Like, we weren't in most of the articles, but Billboard did mention us, so that was nice.
I think that's great. So, do you see yourself moving into that and into doing a lot more music production in VR, or are you trying to not necessarily niche yourself there?
Well, you know, we're all super into music, and we have a lot more ideas for music in VR and mobile VR. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're really focusing on our 360 video platform is obviously kind of content agnostic. Mm-hmm. So we have a couple other customers that will be launching this year. Right now, all of our customers and most of our potential customers are in the general realm of media, entertainment, journalism. Because I think they, those kind of companies understand that this is a new medium that can engage people really, on a deeper level. But we are specifically interested in music, and so the apps that we made for Rhapsody, or our 360 video apps in general, are built on Unity, the video game development platform.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So that means that in a way, it's kind of a Trojan horse for more true VR experiences, that it can encompass more than just 360 video. So we're basically exploring what that could mean for music. Like, we're really interested in, going back to Future Cave, using depth cameras to capture a person in 3D. Like, we're really interested in being able to capture a performer in 3D and potentially make that a social space. Mm-hmm. Where you could, kind of hang out with other people and see a performance from any angle, really, because you're in a true 3D environment. We're super into doing more stuff for music.
Well, one of the things that really excites me is the experiential component. So, I look at what, Google did with Google Street View, and how interesting that was to be able to actually see a location and look around the location and so forth. Very basic, very rudimentary sorts of stuff. And I got into a conversation. I used to work at the Scuba Center in South Minneapolis when I was in college. And I got into a conversation with one of the owners of the shop. And we were talking about how cool it would be to be able to have underwater 360 cameras. And we talked about going wreck diving up in Lake Superior and how fun it would have been to have those cameras and to be able to actually shoot the experience of being in that environment and swimming through the wreck and so on. And so just, you can start to imagine, when you say you're content agnostic, you can start to imagine the kinds of things that people will be producing.
So when we get an underwater housing for our 360 rig, you're the guy to scuba dive. Because there are underwater housings. And actually, Discovery VR, as in the Discovery Channel, they have a VR app that has a lot of underwater 360. And yeah, it's kind of a magical experience. There's also, you can create VR content with a 360 camera, or you can do it with 3D and video game software. And both they're becoming increasingly indistinguishable. Mm-hmm. So I've seen some underwater experiences that are computer generated that are just amazing, because you can basically get as close as you want to a whale or a shark, and it just feels so cool.
Yeah, I mean, you can combine the two too, I would imagine, that really having an enhanced reality. So virtual almost. Chuck, I was going to ask you, I mean, obviously, you're doing some really great stuff with tech, and you've always been sort of leaning towards the cutting edge or on the cutting edge. So as you, beyond what you're working on right now, what do you see in the very near future that's got you excited? What's the next thing, whether it has anything to do with VR and your business, or what do you see coming up that's exciting to you?
Well, that's one of my problems, Phil, is I do get excited about new things.
I know. That's okay. It's a good thing.
It is. It is. I mean, we definitely, you know, we need to stay focused on developing our 360 platform. But I mean, when you experience like something in the HTC Vive, that's just kind of light years beyond what you get in a cardboard. I can't help but be super excited about that. I mean, you can paint in 3D, and I'm super excited about HoloLens and augmented reality. So I, you know, we have other project ideas that are more on that high end.
Right.
And I mean, I don't want to say too much about it, but I have an interest in sort of characters existing in our kind of alongside us, you know, like virtual characters that might live in our reality, so to speak, and maybe they have a little bit of AI to them. So the
Sims kind of meet the virtual reality. Is that the
Kind of meet our reality? Yeah. So, you know, because like that mixed reality where those things are, you know, are side by side, like our reality has virtual characters, you know, in it that are sort of semi sentient. I mean, that's kind of the crazy stuff that I get really excited about and want to kind of play in that realm.
Very cool.
Hey, Chuck, when do you see the hardware coming down in price to closer to a couple hundred bucks as opposed to the several hundred that the Vive and the Oculus Rift are at this point?
Yeah, I mean, that's why mobile VR is really, you know, the on-ramp to VR. And, you know, because the computer is what you have in your pocket already. But yeah, I think it's going to be a while, I think, for that stuff to come down in price. I mean, there's already, you know, there's a video card that came out that's a few hundred dollars cheaper than the high end stuff that they say you need. I can't remember what it's called, but, so there's already some price drops happening and, you know, people know that it's too expensive. So it's kind of up to the hardware to come down in price, and you know, some that depends on components and things, so that can take a little while. But it's already starting to happen with, you know, like cheaper video cards and some cheaper PCs that meet the minimum specs coming out. You know, then I think as this kind of category matures, you'll be able to get into it at a lower price point, as you know, the new hotness is going to always be expensive probably, but you know, over a few years, some of this will trickle down to lower price points.
Very exciting stuff, man. I'm looking forward to seeing the stuff that you put out and the continued growth of your company and just the space in general. So, Chuck, congratulations on the deal with Rhapsody and the continued success of landing clients and making a damn good living at this. So that's great.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a lot of work and it's a heck of a lot of fun.
Well, you know, I think the world of you. So thanks very much for getting up early and joining us. Yeah. And now you can go back to bed.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Chuck.
Thanks, Chuck.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's great. You can check Olson from Visual and his new company. And boy, great stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
We'll put all kinds of links in the show notes. So
yeah. I think the world of that guy.
Yeah.
So let's talk about, you know, on the national front, I guess the big story again this week was the annual Mary Meeker Internet Trends Report, which I don't know, quite frankly, is starting to bore the shit out of me. But anyway, go ahead and let's talk about Mary Meeker's report.
Yeah. Well, Forbes had a nice post, five highlights from her report, because it's 213 slides, so it's not insignificant to go through, let me tell you. And then I'll put a link in the show notes to the PDF. But that's global internet growth is slowing.
Surprise.
And that easy economic growth is over. That year-over-year growth, GDP growth is slowing.
You know, I found this quote interesting, at least in her presentation, and it really struck me as, well, duh. She says the slowdown creates opportunities for companies that create efficiency, add jobs, lower prices, and innovate.
Wow. Really?
slow down, speed up, normal pace. Doesn't that mean opportunity for any company that does that? Isn't that what companies are supposed to do?
Well, and that's why it's all about new spaces and new ways of doing things. And you know, the whole thing about growth, and I've thought about this a lot, and I've had lots of discussions with people. You know, at some point, you know, they talk about the smartphone business is starting to tail off globally. Well, at some point, it's like a Ponzi scheme. You know, there's only an X number of humans on the planet. And at some point, it's got to slow. Yeah, it's saturated. Exactly. And yes, there'll be
all the time.
Yes, there'll be a replacement business and all of that, but it's all about new business. And when you really look at the total global spend for the first, I think it was the first 18 months, that it was essentially Apple eating market share from other companies like BlackBerry, like RIM, with the BlackBerry. And so, and Nokia, and that a lot of the dollars were coming from those platforms and those phone types. And there was a shift, and then the overall market began to grow about 2 years into the adventure. And so, you know, that's where the innovation comes in. And that's why it was interesting to have Chuck on, because you think about the VR space and where things are going. I mean, there's stuff that we haven't even seen yet, which will, you know, dollars and euros and yen and everything is going to flow to that, because that's where the big growth will come. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know.
What were some of the other things, the other takeaways Forbes pointed out? I think there was
voice interfaces, which I thought was the most interesting part.
Yeah,
you know, like Alexa and Siri, and
which I think is I think it's going to have its niche, but I think it's going to have blowback. I think that you're going to see blowback on the voice always on, always listening piece. I don't necessarily believe it's the way people are going to interact with the web or interact, you know, with technology.
I totally disagree.
No, I just don't.
Yeah, that's the way that they did in Star Trek. So obviously that's the future.
So here I am driving down the road and I get a text message. Well, I'm not going to reply, but I have my Apple Watch on. So I click the mic, I touch the microphone, or I touch reply, and then I hit the microphone, and then I just dictate.
Swerve at the car.
No, I'm looking at the road and I'm driving and I say, well, I'm not able to come over now. I'll have to do it later, period. Then blah, 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 exclamation point. And then it'll turn it into text, and then you can just click on the text, touch the text, and it sends it. And so, yes, I'm sending a text message, but I'm not taking my eyes off the road while I'm doing it.
You are completely taking your eyes off
the road. Well, I glance down for a moment.
At this little,
you're trying to hold the thing up to your face and hit the little button. Yes, you are. It's just, so you are a distracted driver, Steve Borsch.
Yeah, but so is the guy eating the cheeseburger in the car next to me.
Or the woman putting on the makeup. Or
Which, by the way.
Or one time I actually saw somebody eating a bowl of cereal on the freeway. So
that happens.
Yeah.
I try to avoid the guys that are reading the newspaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there was a guy that wrote about how the Tesla has changed his commuting. And it's because he can be in bumper to bumper traffic, and the self-driving capability allows the car to creep ahead and stay, you know, appropriately behind the next car. And he doesn't really even have to do anything. And he said it's totally taken away the stress of bumper to bumper traffic. And I thought, okay, I can see that. But yeah, if you scroll through the slide deck, and I'll put a link to the PDF in there. If you scroll through the slide deck, it gets a little sad when you start to look at some of the numbers. You're like, oh man.
Well, yeah, but it shouldn't be sad. The fact of the matter is it's mainstream now. Things are going to level off. They have to level off. When you look at the growth, you know, what are the internet growth was, 9% or something like that? Jeez, 9% does not suck.
Right, right.
Yeah, granted, it's not 23% or whatever, but it's still 9% growth.
Well,
anytime you can continue to grow in an industry, that's a good thing.
Well, and then we're going to have to colonize Mars. And after we colonize Mars and they have their own internet, then we're going to have to connect the two planets together and deal with latency.
We need balloons.
I mean, you know, come on.
Yeah.
So,
well, I don't know. My whole take, and I tend to become jaded in a lot of things. So I'll say that with a grain of salt. I don't think the Mika report really has as much oomph as it used to have. I don't think that there is, I think this internet trends report was really big when the internet was new, and the internet was, making leaps and bounds, and there were huge jumps. I don't think it has as much gravitas without as an industry or a space sort of becomes normalized.
Well, true, but I think that overall, there's nobody that quantifies what's going on in tech better than her report. So
you think so?
I do.
Tim, yeah. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the middle between you two. I think it's kind of, it's very repetitive now. It's because the space has matured. So it's not that much.
And maybe that's it, Tim. Yeah, maybe it's just so repetitive. And there's no huge aha moments in these
reports. Right. You're looking for the next big thing, and there's not really a next big thing. I mean, we went through the smartwatch thing, and that's really not the next big thing. And
nobody should have 200 plus slides. I don't care what you're reporting on.
Yeah. Well, that may be, that slowing of the smartphone space may be why Microsoft, other than the fact that they haven't sold any really, started to lay off a bunch of people. They laid off 1,850 people at Nokia.
Whose fault this is?
Ballmer.
No, Mary Meeker. She's clearly.
Yeah, I know.
They're trying to create efficiencies and totally forgetting about the whole growing, adding jobs.
That's right. I don't know if this means that Microsoft is really not going to have their own branded phone either. Everyone's saying, well, it's Windows Phone is dead. I think that the Nokia Windows Phone definitely is gone. And I don't think they're going to, focus on the low end of the market anymore. But I think there will be a flagship because Windows 10 is optimized to work on a handset.
Okay. Well,
so this is definitely, they're streamlining their phone business. There will be probably something that they will make it, but it'll be for the enterprise, as it says here, and it'll be probably at a high end for a consumer. Mm-hmm. But
no. Okay.
Anyway,
where that goes.
And they're going to still do their iOS and Android apps, which is great for those of us that use those platforms.
That's right. That's right.
So,
well, and then everybody's going after the millennials.
I have an announcement.
I call them those damn millennials. Go ahead.
I have an announcement. I'm pivoting my entire business to become a millennial consultant. And my hourly
money in it. 20
my hourly rate is only $10,000.
There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. So what we're talking about,
price of the others,
for those listening, and we'll put a link in the show notes to a New York Times article that corporate America chases the mythical millennial. And it's all about how really millennials as a group, you can't just throw everybody in. You can't just say, hey, baby boomers. Well, okay. So there are baby boomers that are plumbers, and there are baby boomers that are hedge fund managers making $1 billion a year. And they're all the same age. It doesn't mean that they're the same socioeconomic and or anything that they have the same attitudes. Some are conservative, some are liberals, and some are religious and some are not. I mean, it's just all over the map. And so,
well, you got to look at it this way. The art of demography is not about identifying or trying to clump everybody into one thing. It's taking the average. It's taking the norm. It's because there's exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
And those exceptions can be many and varied. So let's not come down too hard on people that are looking at generations and breaking them into generations and noticing trends in generations.
Well, no, I'm not. And that's what I thought, because that's what when I was reading this, is I thought, okay, well, a lot of this stuff, this is exactly what I think. When somebody says millennials, it's like saying Mexicans or black people, as though that's going to define an entire race, or the Catholics, like that's going to define an entire religion. It's the same thing with millennials. I mean, it's not like that, but to your point, it's all about identifying. So what are the big trends?
Steve, you put this in the notes. What does this have to do with technology?
Well, it has to do with technology, because everybody is looking at tech as a key driver that millennials are using it in different ways. So in the bottom of the article, it says, thanks to social media, smartphones, and reams of searchable data, companies can now track their customers and workers in far more precise ways than simply noting their age cohort. They have your purchase and employment histories, your social media musings, your educational history, your credit report. They can break you down analytically, psychographically, financially, and just about every other way short of physically. And so if you look at it from a technology standpoint, the participation of millennials in terms of deep use of new technologies and new trends and all of that is significantly different than other age groups, either Gen Xers or baby boomers. So that's what it has to do with technology, because
all of that surveillance, though, all of that information, that data about you, that sounds pretty scary. You know, there's that much information, that much data that's out there.
That's right.
What's interesting to me is that the leave it to the newspaper guy to say the word reams.
Right.
But, you know, that said, I think that, Tim, I think that you have to look at this. What really has defined, quote unquote, the millennial generation is, I mean, you have to say that technology is a big piece and the internet is a big piece.
And mobile phones, right. Smartphones. I mean, they're the first generation that really grew up with smartphones.
Right, exactly. Right. So, I mean, so that has everything to do with technology. I mean, I think that, you know, as we look at the attitudes of the quote unquote millennial, I mean, how can you not, you can't dispute a sense of entitlement that generation has, simply because how can you not feel some sort of sense of entitlement, because I feel it too, when you have everything you ever needed to know at your fingertips? I mean, think about the power that has. I mean, the power to say, hey, who's Taylor Swift dating? I mean, obviously not a huge thing, or, you know, boom, you could find out in an instant. How can you not feel a sense of entitlement?
Yeah, but you know, when I was growing up, I just remember how most families in our neighborhood didn't have two cars. They just didn't have two cars. You know, stay at home moms and they just didn't need two cars. And they didn't.
Well, you only
needed
one car in those days.
Yeah, you only need one car. And so, you know, I look at stuff like that, and I look at just the experiences. So I was helping my wife's nephew, or our nephew, Mark, getting ready for his son's graduation. I'm helping him build boards. I'm going to do a video and stuff like that. And we're going through all the images, and he goes, just stop a second. He said, just look at this photo. He said, there are 12 different countries that we were in this photo. And he said, Steve, I didn't even get on an airplane until I got into the Air Force. He joined the Air Force about how we didn't, you know, we were middle class, both his family and our family. And you think about the stuff that kids have been had access to now, and you think about the technology stuff. I mean, oh my God, I had a TV in my bedroom. That was the biggest deal when I was in high school.
Black and white.
Yeah, it black was and white. Black I had a 9-inch black and white.
Yeah, that's what I. Zenith? Yeah.
So
I think it was, it could have been. Either that or RCA, one of the two.
Yeah. Steve, say it with me now. Just repeat after me.
Okay.
You kids. Get off my. Lawn.
Lawn. And pick up your damn dog poop, will ya? There's actually a guy in our neighborhood that has a little sign. Do not, under any circumstances, allow your dog to poop in my yard. And it's a beautiful sign, like it was very custom nice. Made.
Very professional.
Yeah,
very
I know.
Nice. Let's talk about the cool thing of the week.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay, Phil, you do it. Go.
Okay, was cruising through Medium the other day and really kind of liked that platform, but came across this really interesting article called The Future of Work in 5 Charts. You got to check it out. It is, I think, a very comical look at meetings, emails, middle management, that sort of thing. So check it out. As the workforce grows, it'll become increasingly time-consuming to keep each member of the team up to date on various statuses. So there's a great pie chart for that. Let's see. What are the other things?
The size of middle management will swell as the number of people who aren't that important flood the workforce.
Jeez. Oh,
so check it out. It's I just thought it was a great comic bit about a waste of time and what's happening in the workforce these days.
Wow.
So
okay, Tim.
Pebble is back on a Kickstarter with the Pebble Time 2.
Don't these people have their own money yet?
Pebble 2. Well, they really have used the Kickstarter very effectively. I mean, all of their generations of watches have been kickstarted.
What a brilliant business model. You get all your money for free. I mean, how bad is that?
Well, no, they have to eventually ship products, but
yes, but I'm saying
they don't have to give up equity to get it.
Yeah, yeah. There's no equity. It's like this, they've got over $10 million pledged on the Pebble 2 with the Alexa tie-in. And it's just like, holy crap, that's $10 million they have. It's free and clear for them to, or less the Kickstarter percentage, to invest in whatever they want to build and what they try to deliver. So if they don't deliver, what's the ramifications?
Well, they'll look bad, but they've never not delivered.
They'll deliver.
But if they don't deliver, I mean, I'm saying.
But I mean, 25 days to go, and they had a $1 million goal, and they've raised over $10 million.
Right.
It's just absolutely stunning.
Brilliant freaking business model.
Well, I think they're doing something here that's really interesting. Well, the other piece of this is what they call the core, which is this little bitty thing that's a clip-on device that stores music and allows you to stream from Spotify. It has its own data SIM that goes in there. They've seemed to have pivoted to more of a fitness tracker sort of deal. Mm-hmm. And they've always been the cheapest smartwatch out there, and they've always had very long battery life.
Yep.
And I have to say that this Time 2 looks very attractive. It's very tempting to kind of chip in on this thing, because they've had several years for the platform to mature. There's lots of apps, they've got a fairly vibrant ecosystem, and now it's a converged device that not only does notifications and things like that, but also tracks your health and has a heart rate monitor on it. Yeah, so
that Time 2 Silver looks pretty cool.
It looks really attractive.
Yeah.
It is attractive. Yeah.
I mean, the original Pebble is sort of, boxy and big and, but the Time looks good. And this, I think this core is going to be something very interesting.
Yeah, that is going to be interesting.
So,
okay.
We'll have to keep an eye out for them.
Shipping sometime next year, I'm sure.
Well, no, I think it's at the summer. What does it say? November. They say November.
So sometime next year.
They mean February.
Right.
From your personal experience, right?
Well, that if from my personal experience.
How late were they with the original Pebble?
Oh, God, I don't remember. It was really late, though.
Well, it became like a joke here on the show where we would say, hey, do you have your Pebble yet? And you would, mumble something.
It was a few months,
I think it was like 6 or 8 months they were late. I don't remember. But I'm still, the new one is now the Instamic. So we're still
waiting for that. Waiting on that one. All right, my turn.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
So I'm what's up? So you remember the Apple thing where Apple came out and they were going to not have ads in the new news app, and then there's content, they're allowing content blockers to be on iOS and in Safari and so forth. And so Wired.com, Condé Nast owns Wired, both .com and the magazine. And I get the magazine, I've subscribed since the very first issue. And when you started to go to their site, if you had an ad blocker on, it would pull up a pop-up that said, here's the thing with ad blockers. They'd want you to either add this to your ad blockers whitelist or pay $1 a week for an ad-free version of Wired. And so I came across yesterday an article called Here's the Thing with Short-Sightedness. Dear Wired, you don't get it. It's not about ads. It's about behavioral targeting and tracking. And you know that there's been not only trackers in just everywhere, but there's been ad delivered Trojans and other web malware through ad networks including at some of the big publications, even the New York Times. And so Wired blocked their blocker, their ad blocker. And so these guys came out with a block to block the blocker. And he says, now this is, and in their article says, now it's your turn. If you want to, you can inline all your JavaScript to break our blocker blocking blocker rule. and then we can update our rule to make it disable all your first party JavaScript. And we can play this game of cat and mouse all day long, blah, blah, blah. And so I read through the whole thing. And I realized, you know, I have used ad blockers like on the New York Times and so on, and they have like 30 trackers in their site. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But I went ahead and I bought the app for $5. It's called Better by Indie. It's iOS only for now, and I'll put a link in the show notes. And it works flawlessly. It's the best one I've ever had. And so you just launch the app, and then you go into settings, into content, and you just set it up. And it's because when I'm reading the iPad, if I'm going through, like, let's say Mashable, if I'm looking at an article, so I'll start to scroll down and then ads will reload on the top and it'll pop me up to the top. So then I'll scroll down to finish the article and then it'll do the same thing. It'll pop me back up to the top. I get so damn mad because look, I just want to read your frickin' article, you know, quit loading shit. And this happens to me on site after site after site, and I'm done with it. And so that's why I'm
not that it bothers you at all, right?
Well, that and the autoplay videos. I actually do tweets when I come across a site that's doing autoplay videos. I can't tell you how many times when, like last night, I went to a site and all of a sudden
you're a tweet shamer.
Well, yeah, because all of a sudden the autoplay video started, and it wakes my wife up, and I took her to the airport about 5:45 this morning. So she had to get up at like 4:30, 4:45, and she was not happy. And
no, I apologized.
But it's because really, of that Steve? Stuff like that. So anyway, now I can block it.
Good.
That's my cool thing.
Well, you know, the internet has really gotten bad with all these ads. It's really got to stop. We've got to evolve.
We do.
Yep.
We do.
Yep.
So really we don't have anything new, but this big data tech 2016 is happening on Tuesday, this coming Tuesday. Mm-hmm. It's summertime. So we're not going to see a lot of events right now.
Nope.
But
lower.
No,
You know, and I think we should probably, it would be remiss of us, not, you know, especially guys like us, to not acknowledge the passing of Muhammad Ali, happened
yesterday, last night,
hours before this podcast. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have a Muhammad Ali story?
Do I have a Muhammad Ali story? Not, you know, not really. Other than you obviously the Olympic. What year was he? Did he appear at the Olympics?
1964. I want to say four.
No, when he came to the 96 Olympic Games carrying the torch, he was with Parkinson's at that point. I mean, that was probably one of the most moving things I've ever seen in an Olympic ceremony. Ever. So, you know, obviously an inspiration, man quoted many times, a guy that'll be missed.
Yeah. Yeah. Several years ago, it must've been 10 or 15 years ago. We were at LAX. We had flown in to visit my folks, and, at the baggage carousel was Muhammad Ali and his entourage standing there. And, you know, man of great dignity, even though he was ravaged with Parkinson's, you know, he hung in there until the end. So,
yeah.
You know, he got a tip of hat.
Yep.
And he was a good boxer.
There was
He was a good showman. Very good.
A heck of a showman and an activist. So,
yep.
Get it all going on.
All right.
On
that note.
Well, on that note, of course, you know, other things will be happening next week and in the world of technology here in Minnesota, and we'll cover it on
the Minute 8 Gang podcast.
Have a good week.
Take care, boys.
Cheers.